So,
Hello.
the Marshmallow Man, huh?
Mark Melman, yeah. Honestly, like I said in the little bit of a blurb, I've seen way too much of Ghostbusters to not think of that when I'm thinking about how Manhattan's going to be destroyed. It's the
Yeah.
first thing that will always come to mind for me.
I guess it probably would be a big monster, but if I was like really. Yeah, I'm really afraid of blobs. I feel like if I was really trying not to think about what I was afraid of, I think a bunch of like fleshy blob flesh would start pouring out of like the sewers and every open window.
That's valid. Like if I could basically like think and choose rather than the immediate first image type thing,
Sure.
if I could think and choose, I'd probably end up going for something a little bit more like dragons or Cthulhu or something like a little bit bigger and less silly,
Yeah.
honestly. But I wouldn't go for anything like pervasive. Like it wouldn't be like the flood, for instance. You know what I mean? Like it wouldn't be a disease. It wouldn't be a lot of little things. It would probably still be like one big thing, like a dragon or Cthulhu or Haster or something like that.
Okay, you're not supposed to say that.
It's three times you aren't supposed to say it, not once. And I've only
Oh,
said it once.
okay. All right, that's fine then. Let's try not to. Throughout the
It
rest of
again.
this episode, let's try.
Oh man, episode Easter egg. Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice,
I definitely it would, yeah, I feel like some kind of giant monster though, some kind of kaiju would definitely end up popping into my head.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like Godzilla even. 'Cause like I mean that the really I don't want to say really bad because I love it to pieces, but like the really campy, silly 1999 Godzilla with Jean
Oh,
Reno and Matthew Broderick, that
yeah.
one. And Hank Azaria is in it, and Dan Castellaneta,
Yes.
like that Godzilla, like I
Simpsons
love it.
Godzilla.
Simpsons Godzilla, yeah, I love that one so much.
Yeah, it's got a bunch of velociraptors in it.
Yeah,
I feel like it's
well,
long. I feel like that's more than like a more than 2 hours long movie.
I don't think it is. I think it's under
It
2 hours.
might have just felt long last time I tried to watch it.
It's hard to get through. It again, it's like it's one of those cult favorite things. Like if you don't love it, it's just cheesy and drags and silly, but like I love it to pieces. It's silly and fun and just I enjoy it a lot more than I probably should, you know? Oh, I lied. It's
Sure.
98, 99 according to it is over 2 hours. It is longer than I thought. It's 2 hours and 19 minutes according to IMDb.
Felt long.
It doesn't
Felt
to me
long to
though,
me.
so.
All right.
Oh, it's so silly and I love it.
I went and saw it in a movie theater.
So did I.
Awesome.
I really probably shouldn't have. I think I was like 13 or
A little
14. Like
too young.
I was on the edge, yeah, but I saw that in theaters. My grandfather got the tape and this is one of his go-to. I need something to watch. Just to have something on and not TV. He'd
Oh.
watch this all the time. It was this and like The Little Mermaid were the two big ones I can remember from him.
Those that, yeah, those go together. They're both about things from the ocean.
I mean, and then you throw in Glory, which was another big one he loved.
Well,
And
that's got a start. Oh no, I'm thinking of, am I thinking of something else that has a Star Trek actor in it? Oh no, I'm thinking of Roots.
Glory
Any Star
has
Trek actor in Glory? I bet at least some.
Glory is the Denzel Washington and
Yeah.
Matthew Broderick Civil
The
War
Civil
movie.
War one. Oh, Matthew Broderick.
Yeah.
Oh, your grandfather was a fan of.
Nope.
Oh, okay. Seemed like there was a connection.
There is, but that's not what he just liked the movies. It wasn't Matthew Broderick that did it for him. It was everything else.
Roots.
I haven't.
1970. Oh
I've
my
never
God. Oh no,
seen
Roots
Roots.
is not what we're talking about. Glory is.
Yeah,
God
I've
damn
never
it.
seen Roots.
It's got LeVar Burton.
I know it does, and I
It's
keep meaning to see it.
super crazy young. Like
Yeah.
unbearably young.
No, I know. I just it's on my list of movies. It's up there with like Lost Boys and stuff,
Oh
where it's like these are the
man.
movies that people keep telling me I should see, and I just never get around to them.
Glory's got Cary Elwes
That was the other one. Yeah,
from
Terry Hills.
Dracula.
Dracula.
Oh yeah.
No, the only
You
he's my Princess Bride and my silly Robin Hood.
Oh, but he is in Dracula.
I don't know from Dracula. I didn't
Yeah,
know he was in Dracula.
with that crazy guy. Zorg from the
You
Fifth
are so good
Element.
at giving me clarif like what you mean. Oh, Gary Oldman.
Gary Oldman, yeah, that
Gary Oldman
Dracula.
Dracula?
Yeah.
No, Bram Stoker's Dracula?
Cary Elwes, is that, yeah, that's the, is that the question you're asking?
Yeah, I don't remember him in that, and that's a movie I've seen a million times. He's Homewood. I don't remember him in this.
Yeah, he's not a huge role, but he's like one of the dudes. He's one of the party members to like go
I
around
don't
hunting.
remember Arthur Holmwood in this. I know who he is. I know which character he is because again, I know the movie well. I don't remember. I didn't recognize him in there. It didn't stick out.
Yeah, the other
Huh.
bro. The other, there's like two dudes. There's Carrie and another guy, and the other guy's like cousin or something is the main character of Castlevania Bloodlines on the Sega Genesis, which I talked about in the previous episode. Terror, the balance of. Terror, comma, the balance of. But yeah, so obviously we're talking about the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man
Yes.
because of this episode, Shore Leave. I hope I haven't spoiled for you what happens in this episode.
Was there a planet where the fantasies of the landing party become a reality? I think I
Oh,
remember this
yeah,
episode.
there you go. So if you think about the Stay Puft, so if you go to this planet, don't think about the Marshmallow Man destroying Manhattan. That's the
Yeah.
rule.
Oh man. The weirdest things are things that stick around, eh?
As an example.
Well, the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man is the thing I will always think of when I think of like a destroying force of Manhattan, especially once you add in the word supernatural to the question, right? Like I
Sure.
that's always going to be go but like I Ghostbusters is a great movie and I love it to pieces, but I don't watch it like frequently. It's from the 80s and this is most definitely not the 80s anymore. So like here it is 40 years later and it's still like the first thing that comes to mind. It's still and it's literally the end of the movie, Gozer setting.
Yeah, Gozer,
Like
that's
it's
the
it
thing's
really is
name.
that scene. Yeah.
Okay. Zool is a like a harbinger.
Zool is Isn't Zool from the second movie? He's the guy with the bleeding painting.
No, that's Viggo the
It
Carpathian.
is
Zool is
Vigo.
like
Yeah, you're right, you're right, you're
there's
right.
the
Yeah.
keymaster and the
Yep.
gatekeeper. Yeah, Zool and
Yes.
Gordon Shumway or
I've gotten those
something.
two movies confused repeatedly. Vigo. Oh man.
Viggo's
Nah,
great.
the newest one's out, eh?
Yeah, I have not. I saw the previous newest one, but I have not seen Frozen Empire.
Neither have I. It's on my list of things that I'll watch once it actually comes out.
Yeah.
I actually liked what they did with after, what was it, Afterlife?
Is that what it, I think so, yeah. I thought it
I
was
think it
good.
was,
Yeah.
yeah.
I
I
liked
mean, it
it.
wasn't amazing.
No, I
But I
forgot
like,
about
especially,
it
but I what I really liked for it
immediately.
was how they incorporated because like the whole thing that they were doing is they were supposed to be bringing back the original guys. Like they made it very
Yeah.
clear that was the plan. But of course, one of them was dead, right? So you
Yeah.
can't bring him back. And I thought the way they handled it was really, really tasteful.
Yeah, it's his daughter. One of the kids is,
The
or is Paul Rudd.
mother.
Oh.
So, he owned the house at the start of the movie. He died. Like he dies. You don't actually see him on screen at all. And then the daughter moves into the house because she's trying to get it ready for sale with
Okay.
her kid who's heavily coded autistic.
Yeah.
And Paul Rudd is that child's teacher.
Okay.
So they end up they did a forced love thing between the mom and Paul Rudd, which I didn't like.
Yeah,
But
yeah.
heavy spoilers for a 2-year-old, 3-year-old movie. At the very end of it, the kids are solving the puzzle. It's not the adults who are dealing with the problem. It's
Right,
the children
yeah.
who are, and it ends up being like the mom and the kids and Paul Rudd trying to deal with the big bad Gozer at the very end, done by Olivia Wilde, who did a really good job in that role, by the way. She looked fantastic. And the original Ghostbusters, the three that were still living, show up to help out. And while they're there, because it's a thinning of the veil, the dead
Oh,
one is there as a ghost helping out.
gave me goosebumps.
It was really well done. I
Yeah,
loved
I
it. It
love.
thought it
Yeah,
was really
that was
smart.
actually. Yeah, that part I didn't remember until you were actually saying it, but that part was really well done.
Yeah, it was smart. It was
Great.
Like, obviously, I would rather the actor there because no shit. But I
Yeah.
think, given where they were at and what was going on in the world, like with him being dead and trying to still have it be decent, like, and they had everyone else. I mean, they even had Janine.
Yeah.
Like, they had
That's
everyone
great.
else. It was just the one guy who couldn't make it for the obvious reasons, and the way they handled it, I thought was really tasteful. I don't like Paul Rudd though, and he could have not been in the movie, and that would have made it a bunch better. Like, the love story part of it felt really, really forced and unnecessary.
It often does.
It does. You don't
That
need.
kind of thing usually sticks out, but it's also some people just require it, and or
Yeah.
it might just be that it's such an old tradition in the way that screenplays are written that you
I think
gotta
it's the
have.
storytelling, not screenplays. It's storytelling,
It's
period.
just it's an old trope that's a rut that's easy to fall into. Like, we gotta do this.
Yeah, and like I said, like, I don't feel the need for it most of the time. Like, I agree it goes well in a lot of movies. Like, I like it in a lot of drama movies. It's fine. I don't mind it in most, well, obviously romantic comedies are meant to be that. Even some comedies, like, it doesn't bug me. But I feel like it's too forced in, say, an action movie, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And stuff that's, or when they do it in horror and thriller movies too, I'm like, no, you're too busy running for your life. You are not falling in love with the guy next to you and having sex. And I feel like it's just too forced in a lot of stuff because of that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
What can you tell me about Shore Leave?
All right, so Shore Leave. Our standard information is directed by Robert Spar. The written by was Theodore Sturgeon, and taking a very quick glance, I don't think we've encountered either of them before.
Cool.
This episode originally aired December 29th of 1966. It is our last 1966 episode.
All right.
This was right as we were going into
Yeah,
67.
that's right.
Yep. And the IMDb rating is a 7.4 out of 10, so not high, but it's still doing pretty good. It's about middle of the pack for what we've seen so far.
This one is very goofy. It is unique. Well, in the way it's shot, mainly because they were able to do a bunch of big, like, sweeping shots and more action-y kind of shots, because this one is maybe the first one? Well, certainly the first one that is shot almost entirely outdoors.
Yeah, I don't remember it well. I have vague images. And part of the issue I keep running into is I've got vague images, and I don't know if it's from this episode or another episode that is also outdoors on an alien planet. You know what I mean?
There's a couple of episodes that are kind of like fantasy planet, like dreams or whatever
Yeah, like
coming.
Rise of Light. Yeah. So I'm not sure if this is the one I'm picturing in my head, but I do vaguely remember something. That might be this episode.
Okay. Well, yeah. Well, we're here. Let's take a look at it and we'll find out.
Cool, let's go. I'm ready and raring as always.
Right, here it is.
One last mission to sleep.
Hey, welcome back to the Least Ready Room. Lovely to have you here. This is a podcast where Chris and Dave, I'm Dave, are joined by Saint and Weebs and really a variety of other people. We've got surreptitious music on the episode next week to discuss every single episode of Star Trek, which we are also going to watch and then discuss. Today, we are watching Shore Leave. And I would just like to say that I hope Rick Moranis is doing good wherever he is and whatever he's doing. I just, yeah. Big ups to Rick Moranis. Let's talk to Saint and Weebs from Friday night for a little bit, and then we will do the full scene-by-scene episode breakdown with Chris. Thank you for being here. This is the Least Ready Room. What happens in Shore Leave, Saint?
I think they go to some planet that is like, I want to say, they're like, oh, this will be a cool place to chill for a while. It's just a nice planet. And then the planet starts like granting their wishes, but in like fucked up
Oh,
ways.
okay.
Maybe it's been a long time since I've seen this one. I do remember liking this one. I do remember this one being like, oh yeah, there's cool stuff happening in this one, but details elude me.
Yeah, I wasn't sure until I was kind of thinking it might be a planet where there's a bunch of illusions, which is what it might be. But when
It
you
might be
said
like,
it starts granting their wishes, that that really rings a bell.
I think that might be the specific illusions.
Yeah, okay.
And maybe not like literally granting their wishes. Like maybe it's like
I feel like some guys punch each other out. It's more like it gives them, like if there's like a wimpy guy, he starts going around and being a big, tough, strong man and maybe gets
maybe
into a fight with
maybe
someone.
they like there's some hot girls somebody sees. I
I
don't
think
know.
there's hot girls. There also might be like a
Right,
pollen.
hot girls, yeah.
There might be like a drugs pollen that maybe they inhale.
Maybe it's been a long
I feel
time.
like there was like a guy that was like a bully to Kirk, and then like Kirk hallucinates that the bully is there. Like it's not necessarily granting wishes, but it's giving them visions of their subconscious. You ever see Shore Leave Weebs?
Probably not.
You ready?
Yep.
Cool. Here it is.
Love how Dr. McCoy is like, I'm just gonna test this in pure. It Dr. McCoy does the thing that like you
Real
do in like a D&D
scientist.
game where like I'm
Yeah.
gonna roll to disbelieve, and your
Oh,
GM is like, that's a terrible idea, and you're like, I'm doing it, and your GM is like, you get stabbed and die.
yeah. You roll a 20 and your GM still flips a coin.
Yeah, and your GM is like, no,
It's
that really wasn't an
not
illusion.
really, yeah.
I kept trying to tell you that this wasn't an illusion. I don't know where you got that idea from, but now you're dead.
In a case of sheer willpower, the spear still exists.
This is not gonna work on me, I swear to God.
Because that's what's going on. This is not a case of believe or don't believe. These are
No,
physical
these are,
bullets
yeah,
and physical
they.
spears, and a
No, they.
black knight shows up.
Yeah, and I guess that dude, that girl thought about Don Juan trying to come and abduct her, which is kind of fucked up, but
Yeah.
Yep.
And then she dresses like a princess and gets attacked by a black knight.
yeah.
There's a couple of fucked up things
Yeah, so
of that type going on.
she's having abduction fantasies. I
Fantasies,
mean,
yeah.
that's a thing I guess people have. That's a real thing, but I guess I didn't want to see it on my Star Trek.
Yeah, that's kind of a close look to take at a character that we're not going to see again, Yeoman Barrows. This episode starts with the classic meme of Kirk being massaged, and he thinks it's Spock, but he's disappointed when Spock walks around the side of the
And
chair and he realizes
you
it's
realize it's this other yeoman.
Yeoman
Wow.
Barrows.
Who he doesn't like as much
No,
for whatever reason.
he seems not to
Maybe
like her.
because he knows that McCoy's into her and he doesn't wanna
People
get in the way.
say all kinds of shit about Kirk, but he has got a heart of gold. If McCoy, if he knows McCoy is catching feelings, Kirk's gonna be a,
Yeah,
he
he's
is a
gonna be like,
gentleman. He's always a gentleman.
good wingman.
Yeah, so this was kind of, well, so it wasn't a drugs episode, but it was
It
like one.
wasn't.
For a long
It
time, it was
was.
like one.
It was a bit like drugs. They thought. They kind of thought that they were on drugs. They were like, I mean, that was McCoy's hypothesis. He's like, I'm hallucinating. This is drugs.
Makes sense. And
I
we
might
thought
have
it
a.
too.
I might have a similar, you know, idea. I might be like, this is drugs. I've had drugs before. This is kind of like what drugs are.
Yeah, the last time I was being chased down a canyon by a samurai, I was surely on drugs.
Yep.
Yeah, and just like every Starfleet captain... Oh, that's... Yeah, I was thinking maybe the reason that Kirk is so mean to Yeoman Barrows is because he's so stressed out. He needs a vacation. This is the... What happens to every Starfleet captain is that at some point the first officer or the doctor or someone says, all right, Captain.
You are way too stressed out.
You're getting on everyone's nerves.
You gotta take a break. And they're like, no, I don't need a break. Everyone else needs a break, but me... I don't take breaks. I don't need them.
Yeah.
And then they do something clever to show that they do, in fact,
yep,
need a fucking break.
I don't need them. Not me. That sounds like something for people who are not Starship captains.
Yeah, that sounds like something for the weak.
Do you feel like that's the first one that you've seen that had a lot of outdoor footage in it?
Yeah, that was not like that outdoor. It was real outdoors. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's obvious. That's got it. I mean, that's like half of why this feels so unique. This one. It is like they all got to take a trip down to the park and like run around a little bit. Like they really, there's just
trip.
Yeah, tons of running around the park, and that fight scene. It just went on and on.
Yeah, they were beating the shit out of each other, man.
With Looney Tunes circus music playing.
Yeah.
Xylophone.
Everything with Finnegan is a laugh riot. Like, could they have gotten more of a caricature of a little troll? Like...
Finnegan's the Irish guy.
Yeah, the real fake Irish brogue Irish guy with the real leprechaun face, like,
yeah,
jumping up and down, doing the Scooby-Doo shit where Kirk's chasing him and suddenly he's on top of a rock over there or over here instead of Kirk's running by and he's just laying down relaxed, ready to make fun of him, and then they start beating the shit out of each other.
That's a classic episode, but I'm going to give it a low rating of like 7 because of just the total randomness of it.
Sure.
And also just, it's inconsequential.
Yeah.
Nothing important happens. Guess what? Nothing important happened. Everyone's fine.
Yeah.
Nobody died. Everybody's cool. And, we're not going to tell you anything about, you know, the people who built this planet or anything like that because you're not really advanced enough for that, guys. We're just going to hand wave that.
Basically, just we're required to tell you at the end why this all happened. So here it is. Goodbye.
Yeah, it's very ex machina.
Yeah, really. And it really is just a series of strange things happening.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no like cohesive plot or anything.
Yeah, there's not a lot happening structurally for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, not, no, it's
yeah, oops, to be perfectly
we're
honest,
on some weird planet.
Yep.
To be perfectly honest, I was kind of clicking around on Stellaris for a little bit while I was watching this one.
How recent is the new Stellaris?
Oh, there's a DLC called The Machine Age that just came out recently, so I'm playing that.
Recently as in, like, within a week or so?
A couple weeks ago.
Is it cool?
Yeah, they added a bunch of new stuff for machine races. They have individualized machine race, like, individual machines instead of, like, hive mind machines.
Hive mind, yeah.
So
hive mind-controlled automatons.
Yeah, so think more like those guys from Stray. Except, like, you know, except like a real civilization.
I like, I like it when a bunch of nonsense happens all in a row, and I found that one very enjoyable.
It's true. It's still funny, and it's still fun, and it's still like,
yeah.
They still get you for a moment. They're like, nope, we're just going to stab McCoy. And you know he's not dead.
Right.
Because
it's...
Yeah, we'd ruin it.
For a variety of reasons.
We're not watching Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't do that shit back then, first of all.
This isn't like The Wire or Game of Thrones or, you know, something. This is Star Trek, man. The only people they kill are guys with red shirts who have not been on the show in a previous episode.
I love that Spock's big asshole line this time is, why do humans like running around on grass so much and wasting your energy when you could be conserving it? Fuck you, Spock.
You're such a dick about this, Spock.
I love it. It's a 9 from me. Did you say 7, Saint?
I said 7.
Okay. We didn't, like, these are all high. We always rated high overall. I've never gone below a 5.
I'm trying to think if there are some shitty episodes. I'm sure there will be. Not, you know, some of those early episodes, like looking back now at like Charlie X and Where No Man Has Gone Before, probably should have given those like a 5 or something. Yeah. Some of those were kind of shitty episodes.
I'm just enjoying it so much. It's just it is.
I did say that too. I just like when I first started doing this with you guys that, I'm gonna give you guys some fucking inflation, some score inflation, because I love the original series. I just love it.
It's good.
I mean, you know, and a large degree of that is nostalgia, like no question. No,
and there you go. Yeah,
But I love it.
I might find that there ends up being a curve if I might kind of curve into more. A median where I'm going up and down below 5. Because right now I'm working in, you know, like 6 through 9, basically, is what they all have been.
Right? It's like, are you ever going to give any of these episodes like a 2? Or are you just going to be like, this episode was just bullshit. How did it get aired?
Do you think there's
I was thinking that for this one, I was thinking like a 4.
Okay.
But stepping back and looking at the entire franchise as a whole.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
It makes a little more sense in that context.
Okay.
So I'm like at a 6.
Okay.
6? I feel like... Great. I feel like there are going to be some like 1s and 2s if we actually get into like beyond TNG. There might be some 1s and 2s in TNG. Do you think that's possible? But I don't know. I might just be still having so much fun. Sorry, which one?
I'd be having fun there. I'm trying to remember if there are any like truly
bad ones.
The last episode of TNG season 1 is a bomb.
The worms? The bluegills?
No, it's where Riker gets a thorn in his leg, and it turns into like a best of season 1 episode.
That's the end. That's the last episode of season 1?
It's a clips episode?
Yeah.
Wow, that's bad. That is bad.
Yep.
It's the only time, as far as I know, that Star Trek did that.
That's going to be a
season 2. I think
maybe they were thinking episode. we don't have budget.
Don't know if we're coming back.
We don't have budget. We don't know if we're coming back.
The writer was drunk that week.
I was told that the Menagerie does not count as a clips episode because it isn't actually. Do you know what the Menagerie is, Saint?
Yeah. No, I know. And I listened to the episodes.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, I haven't seen the Menagerie in a while. It's kind of a clips episode, but it does occupy a weird space because the clips they're showing were not seen previous to that.
Yeah.
You know, it's only a clips episode if you're watching it in 2024 and you saw the cage before you saw the Menagerie.
Yeah.
You know.
So, Weebs, there's an episode of TOS where Spock gets everyone together and he's telling he's explaining like the story of what happened to the previous captain. So what he does is he puts on the unaired pilot of Star Trek, and he's like, "Here is the video of what happened to the previous guy, and it's the fucking unaired." And we watch for two episodes of TOS. They're sitting in a boardroom watching the unaired pilot. It's great, and it actually, they actually improve on it by making it into
framing it like that.
Yeah, it's pretty good. But a funny thing to do on 60s television, which is what fucking Star Trek is, at least this series. TOS is bonkers.
TOS has some bonkers. Well, I mean, it's the 60s, so it's definitely, first of all, like a different culture.
Yeah.
It's one thing to watch it in the 80s and being an 80s kid and like thinking about the 60s and it being only like 20 years ago. So still like a little weird, but at the time, like in the 80s, I remember watching these things in the 80s and it not being as weird.
Oh yeah.
Because the shows that were coming out were still not all that far removed from that.
This was
the look and the Shades of Grey. Is that the name of the TNG episode?
Yeah, it's season 2.
Okay. Is the bluegills the end of season 1? I think that's the one.
When they
blow that guy's whole torso off and there's a thing inside snarling at them?
It's a weird little claymation bugs
puppet thing. Yeah, the weird little claymation bugs. They're called bluegills, aren't they? Or am I?
I forget.
Anyway, they ended up being one. I think they became the Borg. I think that the writers were like, we have this weird conspiracy of these guys that get taken over, and let's not do bugs though. Let's make them cyborgs.
Yeah.
Something like that. The writers decided they didn't want to do parasite bugs. They're all sitting around eating handfuls of mealworms. Riker's like goes in there and he doesn't want to eat mealworms and he has to pretend or something. It's
actual mealworms. It's not like Klingon. Like what's that Klingon dish? Cog.
Gok. I love it when
that's the noise humans make when they see people eating it.
They see people eating it. Can you recall any of the things Ezri says about Gok? That might more be a question for Weebs.
I don't think I've ever actually seen any DS9 episodes with Ezri Dax. I think I might have seen like one episode of DS9 with Ezri Dax.
It's really
for me, Dax is Jadzia.
Yeah, no, the Ezri thing, and I've talked about it, is very strange.
And you talked about it,
swapped her out. It was really weird.
And it was like, I think like you said, it was like an opportunity to have like a different kind of character and to have that interesting thing of the Trill thing happening where like they change bodies and they're kind of a different person, but they're still the same person. But Jadzia and
the writers didn't want to do that.
We're the exact same person.
Yeah, they really, really were. But yeah, she does a thing where she's listing the types of Gak and what the differences are. And I wish I knew the Klingon names, but she's like, there's this one that hops and this one that has legs and this one that terrible. But yeah, they're sitting around like eating.
And you gotta eat them alive because otherwise they go bad immediately.
Right. I don't know what the gill worms, what the bluegills are eating, but it's probably some worm from their planet that probably also is. Anyway, they blow a guy's whole torso off with phasers in season 1, and then it's monstrous. It's like something out of like a fucking Aliens movie. there's like a puppet. There's like a plastic puppet in his chest that they have to shoot that next. So I can't wait for season 1 of TNG. Some of that is trash.
Oh my god, yeah. I'm looking again at like this the list of like I looked at like the list of worst Star Trek episodes. I'm looking at like what people have rated really low.
Wonder if Threshold is on any of those. I think it won an Emmy.
No, well I'm looking at the original series one only.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm trying to remember if I remember any of these. I'm like, I don't remember many of these episodes, probably because they were bad.
Yeah,
we'll didn't see watch if... any of them anymore.
I don't.
Mud's
yeah.
Women. Actually, Mud's Women is on this list.
Okay. I don't know if I'm going to think any are bad.
In retrospect, that episode
there's some
was
bad
pretty
stuff.
Bad.
Yeah, that one was pretty bad. I gave Charlie a 5 just because I was so annoyed with the character, but it's actually a good episode.
I don't know. That one is kind of annoying, too. Anyway, anything else
there
to
it
say?
Is. Look.
There it is. You just pulled it up.
Yeah!
Yeah.
His head explodes, and then his torso bursts open with a fucking chest burster. And you, like, see his skull while he's getting vaporized. It's insane. Yeah, and he's got, like, the queen bug or whatever.
Yep. Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, wait, I gave Muri a bad rating, because I was like, stupid kids are annoying, and this plot wasn't very good.
Do you think you gave it below 5?
I think I gave it a 5.
I do have, like, I could actually find out.
You're keeping track of...
I got
of
a doc, yeah.
I don't think I gave Conscience the King a rating.
But oh, you don't? I thought you gave... You might have given... I think you gave it a 10. I might not have
asked.
Yeah,
if I didn't... If you might not have asked, but the answer is 10, yeah.
Did we already... I already put that one out.
That one came out already, yeah.
Yeah, maybe not, if you didn't notice that it was in there. But yeah.
Yeah, not much to say about Shore Leave, I guess. Because, again, a bunch of random shit. And then it was all a dream, essentially. It was all a fake. We were just playing.
Yeah. We were just playing, and you guys aren't advanced enough.
Sorry.
But also, he was also why don't you have your whole crew come down here and manufacture slime people to have sex with?
Yeah.
So you're advanced enough to understand that part of it.
Yeah. Well, that's what he said. He was like, we probably should have explained this from the beginning. We didn't. Because we thought you knew what was up right from the start. That's our bad.
You gave Miri a 5 out of 10. So 5 is the lowest any of us have given anything. Great.
Great.
Maybe we'll figure out if there's a bell curve or whatever. Maybe it'll... But honestly, these are all... That rating from me is how much fun I'm having. So...
Yeah.
Who else gives a shit?
That's a big part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what else is there?
Right. Man, obviously, thank you guys both so much for being here and talking to me about Star Trek.
My pleasure.
I'm having a lot of fun.
This is a great project.
Thank you. I'm glad to have you guys here. Yeah. I've always liked Star Trek. I guess I kind of forgot how much I liked TOS because once TNG came around, it's like, well, that's real Star Trek now. Oh man, yeah, there's the image of it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're all of the age that TNG was coming out while we were alive.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, and more or less, we were all watching it when it was coming out, or if not when it was coming out, like
every
while
Sunday.
It was being rerun and stuff.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I mean, it was 7 years that was happening.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It continued with the other ones,
right? And even when it was like we were talking about the way old TV used to work, even when it was only the new episodes were only coming out on like Sunday nights.
Yeah,
you could catch an episode of it like every day.
Yeah, they'd have the preview
if you wanted on some channel somewhere. They'd be rerunning old
the
seasons
after school
somewhere.
Syndicate blocks.
Yeah, or like on TNT or you know, I don't even remember what channel
on
the actual
VHS because you recorded it last week.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
A lot of that.
You,
a lot of that going on
a bunch
in the
of
early
episodes.
90s.
Dude, I remember rewatching. The Best of Both Worlds and Redemption parts 1 and 2 on both of those repeatedly because I recorded and kept the VHS tapes of, like, the, you know, the fucking, you know, season finales of, you know, of those, and being, because those were the actual, like, those were probably the best season finales and, you know, or season openers that they had, you know.
Yeah. That was a cool time to be watching TV.
My mom has a cabinet full of the old VHS tapes that we used to record TV on.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, yeah, from the 90s, and they closed the door and never looked again.
Never looked at the cabinet?
No. So I have to...
Yeah,
my parents got a bunch of,
interesting to look at.
Yeah. My parents have got a bunch of old VHS tapes too, and I'm not even sure they have a VHS tape player that works. They don't use it, but they haven't gotten rid of it. And there's definitely some old recordings of some,
yeah,
like some like old TV,
even old commercials.
Yeah,
dusted by today's standards.
Too bad that most people would pause the recording when the commercial came on, as a rule.
Yeah, sometimes. Well, it depends.
Sometimes,
like,
you get the commercials.
But if you were recording it while you were watching it, sometimes it while you're while.
My
you're
parents
ready.
Were big Set into going out and setting the VCR on a timer.
Yeah, so it would come on and record Lost when
My parents as well did the same thing. They set it up and, like, left.
Man, I should go see what kind of weird recorded VHS tapes are in my parents' basement. A weird and different time.
Yeah.
Different TV.
Yeah, totally. Complete the whole concept of TV.
Yeah, we talk about that, like, so much.
Every time.
Every time.
It's TV just, you can't
so
even compare.
Mind-boggling.
What it was, yeah. Anything you showed me on TV in the 80s blew my mind, because there were, like, five things, and one of them was Star Trek. How great was that? I definitely watched a lot of TAS as a young man, as a less than 10.
So yeah, we'll I don't think that. I've seen much of that yet. It'll be interesting to look at that, because I don't know TAS. All I remember was being, like, weirded out by the uncanny valley of the way the characters looked.
It's weird. It's like C-Lab.
Yeah. It's not an animation style I'm fond of, so.
And Barbera.
They ever tell us the name of the planet, do they?
Shore Leave Planet.
Yeah, but I mean, like...
But no.
Is it? Yeah, like, I know there's one of the episodes, I think, if I remember correctly, in the original Star Trek run, they visited Risa, but they hadn't named it as Risa, and then when TNG visited it, they took that name, I think. But I can't remember which planet that was, you know?
Oh boy, yeah, I do not know. Didn't somebody say something about going to, like, Wally's pleasure planet or something like that? There was something.
I like the episode.
I like it too. It's extremely silly.
But you know what? When I'm talking, like, and I've mentioned it a few times, when I talk about Star Trek Camp, like, this is the shit that I'm talking about. That kind of stuff, where it's like, it's just a little bit lighthearted, a little bit silly. They don't take themselves too seriously, and it's just a fun episode to enjoy.
Yeah, and it is brightly colored and campy with, you know, with that kind of soundtrack, that kind of just, it's almost like a cabaret or just a, like a, just a very like lighthearted, energetic vaudeville. Yeah, that might have been the word I was looking for. Yeah. That kind of presentation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I enjoy it. I mean, it's a good episode. It's a lot of fun. It's a little bit silly, but it's still well acted. And I as like I said to you while we were watching it, like more and more, I'm like, no, I remember this. I remember this. I remember this. Like little things were jumping up. And it's like, yeah, no, I definitely had the wrong episode in mind earlier, but I am remembering this one as we were going through it, right? So.
Sure.
I do remember the first time I saw it, I actually thought they killed McCoy and I was sad.
Well, I mean, they do make it, they make it look that way, and he stays dead.
Yeah.
Until and, the very end.
It was a major character, and he was one of my favorites on the show back then, so like, well, still is now, but I mean, when I saw it the first time, so it was like, it was devastating. They're killing off the best character, and then, oh, okay, so it's 100% just a cartoon I'm watching, got it, at the end, you know, where it's like, yeah. Oh, nothing is resolved.
None everyone of this is matters, still, yeah. There's yeah, no,
everyone's
yeah.
Everyone's still there. No, there's no permanence.
It's actually really, it's a very, I've mentioned this before, that there are certain Star Trek episodes that seem to just end, and this might be the prime example.
Yeah.
There's everything happens, and then a guy comes out and says, oh, none of that matters. Why don't you just, you know, come have a vacation and then sail away again? And
well, it's Baylock again, where, yeah, oh, right. we've right. solved the mystery. Ha ha, we rock. Show over.
Mm-hmm. This is what it was.
But I honestly feel like, because this does end up becoming the animated series eventually, right? Like, and I feel like this is the episode that they used as an example of, to like, no, seriously. Like, it is. It feels like this is straight up just a live-action version of an animated series episode.
I feel like something like this happens on the animated series. I don't know if they go to this planet again.
I don't, unfortunately, like, I don't remember.
But I feel like there's a similar episode.
Sorry, the animated series? Yeah.
Sorry, yeah.
No. Yeah, there might be. I'm just saying, I agree. Like, I don't know. I don't know the series well enough.
I legitimately well can't wait. I hope it's not, like, super annoying to everyone to watch that show.
I think it's going to be a very hit or miss. Like,
yeah.
I think the IMDb even is going to be hit or miss when we get there. Like, I don't expect it's going to be great overall.
Yeah. But
it's also part of it, too, that has to be remembered is with IMDb, if I remember correctly, the ratings are user rating. They aren't like critic rating, right? So this is the fan base watching it. An animated series specifically is one of the least watched parts of Star Trek. It's the one of the least well known parts too. So as much as I'm expecting it to be low ratings, I'm expecting it to be low ratings partially because of just lack of ratings, you know?
Right. Yeah. Do you get the feeling that maybe the air, I'm sort of putting this together right now.
No worries.
But do you get the feeling that perhaps the atmosphere on the planet has some kind of narcotic effect
on all of our main characters?
Because they all seem kind of like, oh, okay. Like they're all, like, Hulu. Jesus. Sulu's just fucking firing a pistol. So this is where I was kind of going. If the planet is going to read your mind and produce whatever you're thinking about, it could just be that the humans beam down there and they're thinking, oh, look at this beautiful place. I should feel so relaxed and renewed and not worried about anything. And do you think the planet, like, reads their minds about how they expect to feel and manufactures a chemical that has that effect on them?
Oh, that's not where I thought you were going at all, actually. I agreed with it because what I was thinking was happening and what I think is a very possible thing is, so, for example, and I'm going to, real world example of what I'm getting to for the planet.
Mm-hmm.
It is known that Disney pipes out fresh baking scents on their main street to entice people to go into the stores. They pipe out actual smells to make people want to go into the stores on Main Street.
Yeah.
And this probably is a other, known,
yeah.
And that certain smells can elicit specific responses from humans in general. And I think that it's very possible that this planet has a comparable thing that elicits like euphoria, maybe a more easily deceived feeling.
Sure, yeah. Like, a willingness to go with what you see, to suspend something disbelief. In
that. Yeah, something in that vein. Or
that
even
would make
just,
it work.
Not even like necessarily that, but like this place is good, this place is great, I love this, this is fun. Like it's not even necessarily a willingness to go along with it, but like an enjoyment of it more, you know? And that's where I think it's coming from. I think it's something, I think something like that might be happening as a real possibility.
I like that. Yeah. Because it does. Except,
there's no proof, obviously, but.
It's not mentioned in the episode at all.
Yeah. This is just speculation on our part.
I almost feel like if there's an episode like this, it might involve. So I kept saying when I watched this with Saint that I thought it was going to be some kind of pollen. So I feel like there's like an animated series or another episode where they go to a planet and hallucinate because of some flower.
Well, I mean, they did that with. Oh no, I guess I was just falling asleep. But they kind of hit on that a little bit with like Wizard of Oz when they did the original Wizard of Oz movie with. Well, not the original. I don't know, but the one with Judy Garland.
I feel
back
like
back in 1939, they had that with the poppies and the asbestos falling
yes,
down.
Yes, yes,
which knocked
yes,
them out. And I feel like whether or not Star Trek has an episode or a movie or whatever that takes place someplace that does that, I feel like that.
It's a trope.
Well, not even a trope, but like that happened in Wizard of Oz, and now anything that comes close to that feeling has an implicit expectation therein of the Wizard of Oz thing. You know what I mean? So, like, anything where there's something coming close and maybe, you know, a euphoria is being created or, like, hallucinogenic properties are present, that it's something that feels like it's going to be in line with something falling from the sky, a la pollen or snow or something in that respect.
Okay. One of my, first and biggest observations, which I think we talked about a little bit, and then we talked about during the episode, is the very outdoors, a lot of action shots, a lot of, like, long panning shots. Like, they're really using the fact that they got a chance to shoot outdoors. That is one of the biggest impressions of this episode, and also the soundtrack that they use, which is ridiculous. Very high energy, very, a lot of flutes, a lot of, there's one part where it's like an Irish jig, but the fight music, just very sharp, very exciting, and just a score, like really a lot of music all over this episode, but a lot of it is that high energy, very cartoony. I mean, this is not what I've been saying, this is not where, I haven't been like trying to get here, but I did describe this to Saint as a drugs episode.
It does feel like a drug.
It feels like they're all on drugs, yeah. And that's not... Yeah. I didn't, like, go out of my way to put that all together, everything I just said about chemicals, to get here, but...
But, I mean, it's still accurate.
It's a little bit like The Naked Now or something like that, where everyone is a little bit out of their minds. I mean, some of those episodes, they're a lot out of their minds.
Yeah. No, it's still a really solid episode. I do appreciate that they got to actually film on a real planet. Like, that's nice, rather than them filming like on a soundstage, like outdoors, seeing actual like planets that they can encounter and interact with, because like previous episodes where they've been outside have clearly all been on sound stages, and it's clearly fake plants, you know, so nothing has been, and it does lend some realism to the show. Like, don't get me wrong, I still think like the show does a decent enough job given the time and the like the technology that was out there to try and make these fantastical, foreign, impossibly created worlds feel as real as they can within the scope of the show. But like, I feel like this one here, just because they were able to be in a real planet, planet, like outside.
Yeah, this
real
one.
Planets is what I mean.
Planet
I mean.
Earth.
Yeah, so they're able to actually do this stuff a little bit nicer in some respects. And
no,
like,
I mean, it looks great.
It does. And, it's awesome. Like, being able to watch, like, Sulu walk around and actually take samples of, like, real plants.
Yeah.
Instead of it being something fake. And, again, we're looking at it 60 years since it was made. Our technological advances are above and beyond what they could have done in the show. Like, they're doing the best they could at the time. But it just feels so much better now to be able to see it, like, be real.
It's a nice...
I love it. I love the realness. I do. I love practicals, and they're able to do practicals so much better when it's actually a real living thing.
This episode stands out for those reasons, for everything you do. Like, it's out of everything we've seen so far, this one is unique for the reasons that you just said. Like, it really stands out.
It does.
And it really looks good.
I love it. I love it. I'm good. I mean, I'm jumping the gun. We haven't even gotten to the proper discussion yet, but I'm saying it now. It's easily an 8.5, if not a 9 for me. This episode's fantastic. I love it.
I wish I knew what I gave it on Friday, but it was probably an 8 or a 9. I did like it a lot. It was a 9. So this episode opens with a scene that is kind of famous now. I mean, I've seen this like as a meme of Kirk needs his back rubbed and he thinks Spock is doing it, and then Spock walks around the front of the chair and Kirk gets sad that it's Yeoman Barrows.
Well, I mean, we talked about that briefly, but like that is that I do not remember a time that people have not been trying to tell me that Kirk and Spock are gay together, and there's no question why that's belief.
Yeah, do you, I mean, this is, have you heard the term slash fiction?
Oh, yeah. No, I grew up in fan fiction. I Slash and Yaoi are both... They are a Yaoi couple. Like, when I was a kid, when I used to read horror in the Star Trek vein...
Yeah.
Well, not kid. We're talking, like, high school. Kirk, Spock were one of the biggest pairings that I was running into.
So do you know where the term Slash comes from?
I don't know where it comes from, but I know what it means.
It comes from... Kirk slash Spock.
Oh, really?
Okay, yes.
Cool. See, I know slash is used specifically. So, for those who don't know fan fiction, to clarify a few things really quickly, slash is used to indicate male-male relationships, generally speaking. So, if you're hearing about slash fic, it's fan fiction involving a male-male pairing, usually of romantic, if not sexual, nature. In fan fiction parlance, if you're writing a fic and you're putting tags to indicate that the person's involved, there's a slash and an ampersand that are used. The slash means that they are a romantic, if not sexual, pairing. The ampersand means they are friends.
There you go.
These are important to know if you're looking at fan fiction and want to find stuff within a pairing that you're interested in and aren't necessarily interested in romantic and or sexual relationships.
Yeah, so it is sort of, so probably, it would probably be hyperbole, or that's the wrong word, but it would probably be assumptive to say, although it is sort of generally believed that fan fiction and slash fiction and pervy doujinshi fiction came from Star Trek, specifically from Spock and Kirk.
I wouldn't be surprised.
This was one of the first fandoms of people actually getting together because they like to think so much.
Well, yeah, making and weird shit. I think part of the fan fiction for this one being like kind of that leaping point into modern fan fiction as a general sense also comes from, if you, again, looking at media in general, they're fairly on point with like this person is hooking up with this person and that is the pairing and that is it. Mm-hmm. A great example is like stuff like I Dream of Jeannie, where like you could imply possibly other relationships or swinging between the couples, but people are coupled up. People are set. This is who is hooking up with who. There's no questions. Whereas then you get stuff like Star Trek. To a degree, you get it with like Gilligan's Island 2, which I know is one of the earlier ones, but less so.
Okay.
Where people are doing, what's it called?
Fan art? Fan fiction? Just
ensemble casts.
Oh!
Where it's multiple characters who aren't set up already in a relationship. So
right.
Like, this is why I was saying Gilligan's Island to a degree, right? People used to pair Ginger with everyone on that show because she wasn't paired up already and she was cute. And I know that there is some pairing preferences for the Skipper with Gilligan as well, which not nearly as big as this, but like Gilligan didn't have the fandom base. It was popular, but it lacked the nerd fandom base that kept it going. For
Gilligan and the Skipper were definitely hooking up.
Oh, for sure. 100%. I mean, you're out on the boat alone for months. You're hooking up. But, like, Star Trek had that. It had that 60... It's had 60 years of just continual growth. So, like, it started when this stuff wasn't necessarily common or spread around, but it lasted into the 90s with the birth of the internet and early fan fiction sites being able to start taking off, and things like LiveJournal and Wattpad started in, I believe, in the mid-2000s. And fanfiction.net was big back in the early 2000s, like back before the internet really was the internet. Back before Google was a thing, ff.net existed. And I still remember being so angry because ff.net decided to offboard a bunch of their higher rating stuff. They decided they wanted to be more family friendly, so they were limiting. And I remember a huge backlash throughout the entire fanfiction community being like, you're getting rid of the ability for people to post a lot of the more mature content. And it wasn't even necessarily about sex, but people wanted to explore mature themes in general.
Sure.
And they weren't being allowed. Yeah. And that's actually why we have Archive of Our Own now. Archive of Our Own. I'm sorry, I'm giving a fanfiction history lesson here. I'm sorry. But Archive of Our Own is one of the bigger sites right now with a stronger bent towards those more mature topics and higher ratings because of fanfiction.net. It was people who used to be on ff.net who wanted to be able to put their fanfiction out there, wanted a central repository for multiple fandoms. And so they were like, screw it, we'll make our own site. And that's why that one got so big, because like most other fanfiction sites are for a specific pairing or a specific fandom, but they don't cross everything. And so, yeah, Wattpad, ff.net, and AO3 are the big spots to find them now because they cater to everything, and because AO3 was willing to take on NC-17 and mature-rated fanfiction when ff.net took that away. So there's your 20-minute history on fanfiction.
Do you read a lot of fanfiction?
I have, off and on. When I was in high school, I read a lot, mostly Star Trek. Different series, different pairings, it didn't really matter. And at the time, I was really big into Harry Potter, so I had a couple of pairings with Harry Potter I read a lot. Nowadays, like over the years, I've kind of gone back to Harry Potter and then away from Harry Potter and back to Star Trek and away from Star Trek for fan fiction, with an increasing gap between them all the time. And then recently, I've picked it back up again because of Fallout, I'm not going to lie, the Ghoul and Lucy.
That's a pairing.
That is a pairing, and that is the most popular pairing from that show right now. I'd say about 80% of the fan fiction on AO3 under Fallout TV specifically is Ghoul Lucy. I've also gone on there sometimes for other shows and podcasts and stuff just to see if there was anything for it in a pairing I liked, and then I'd read like a couple of stories and then put it down again for, you know, months on end.
Sure.
But like podcast wise specifically, there's a podcast called the Black Tapes Podcast, which I've told you about before.
Yeah. When we were doing Cthulhu. Yeah.
They've got I don't know how strong it is now, but when it was new, there was a couple of very dedicated fans doing fan fiction on AO3 specifically.
Interesting.
But they've I don't know what's going on with it now. It's like, I haven't looked at it again. I look at it for about a month or two and then I move on and don't look at it again for a year. Right. So
in this one, they find a nice planet to take a break on. McCoy, after the incident with Kirk's back rub, McCoy beams down to a planet with some people, and there is a guy in a, like, mall Easter bunny costume. Yeah, I don't know if I expected it to look more like... Like, basically, I guess, if I had seen this character, I wouldn't say I saw a giant rabbit. I would say I saw a guy in a rabbit costume.
Yeah, no, definitely the way he's talking about it was a bit weird, but
it does leave giant paw prints, so. But again, you know, that might, right there, that's me, like, with not suspending my disbelief or whatever.
I mean, it's hard, again, I mentioned it just a moment ago, too, where it's like the special effects and ability to make things look realistic and the technology were very different back then. And unfortunately now, because we've gotten so much used to the better stuff, it's a lot harder, I find, sometimes.
Yeah.
For example, a great example is green screen, right? Like, not to diss on green screen, but you can see green screen that I very clearly remember as a child thinking, this is friggin' awesome.
Mm-hmm.
This looks so realistic. There's no way that, like, it's impossible to see it as anything else. It's clearly the thing. And then you know, I look at it now and I'm like, you can see the green screen outline so well. And it just immediately takes you out of it, right? And it's the same thing with the rabbit. I'm sure in the 60s, if I saw that, I'd been like, wow, that is a very believable thing to have seen.
Yeah, it would have been really different. Yeah, exactly. And that's, yeah, exactly. It would have been really different to see this when it was there. And also, I think the green screen thing kind of has to do with what I'm about to say, but we used to watch all this shit on CRT televisions.
Yes.
Not to mention that we only got to see it once.
Yeah. So it's a lot less, it's a lot more blurred. It's, I actually saw it even, my computer monitors aren't as good as some of the TVs that are out now.
Sure.
And we were at a friend's place, and I told the guy, you know, you should watch Fallout. So his dad went and found it so they could have it on their watch list.
Yeah.
And the difference between watching it on their TV versus watching it on my computer monitor, TV is so much prettier and it moves so much differently.
Sure.
I speak English good.
Yeah.
But no, it does. There's an obvious difference, and that's within, like, the now, not even looking at a 60-year gap, right? That's within, these are within a couple of years of each other, technology.
Yep.
So, yeah, no. CRT TV is doing this. And the 60s would have been smaller. I think black and white televisions were still being phased out around now, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, so there was a lot of factors that could play into the believability of this that we don't have now.
I mean, I was even talking about, like, us growing up, but yeah, in the 60s, I don't, yeah. Well, obviously, I wasn't there to really see what TV looked like, but I'm sure it was, we know it was a lot different. The fact that everything can just be replayed and you can just find it again immediately and watch everything again right after you've just watched it, really, people aren't going to understand what big of a difference that made to the way we do everything we do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm bordering on, you know, the fact that we have all the information in the world in our phones, in our pockets, and as a result, we're never going to need to learn anything. And I think that's affecting everyone, just like all of the television in the world at our fingertips at any moment.
But we don't have all the television in all the world at our fingertips at any given moment.
Well, if you have enough money.
Okay, well, yeah, but that's true back in the 60s, too. If I had enough money back in the 60s, I could have had whatever I wanted.
Well, for TV, I mean, you would have to, there'd be also work involved. You'd have to buy, I don't know if you had a VHS recorder to record this stuff on. I don't think there was any, like, if you had a lot of money in the 60s, how would you go about watching all of the TV?
Oh, you buy the reels from the broadcasters and you have it set up like
a movie theater. And you have a projector.
Yeah.
That's, yeah, okay. That might be more money than it would cost to have every streaming service today.
But again, we're talking if I have enough money, right?
Oh, yeah. Yes. You have all the money you want. You're right.
Yep.
It's a little bit, still a little bit different to try to do that.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it's as easy as it is nowadays. I'm just saying it's still, you could still do it. It's still very doable. I'm not sure exactly when they made the last broadcast. I'm trying to find the last black and white broadcast to be able to. And the Wikipedia article is dense, and I don't feel like reading it. I will not look this up.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Yeah,
I don't know
anything about broadcasting formats or like what actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I feel like there were probably a lot of different formats, but yeah, I know nothing about the topic. So Spirk. That's another term for Spock / Kirk. Spirk.
Would it be Spirk or would it be Spork?
Spock thinks touching grass is for dorks.
He does.
He thinks everything humans do is for dorks.
Doesn't like fun. He just hates fun.
Yeah, that's basically what he's saying in the in this scene. He's like, humans are running up and down over a field of grass like a bunch of dorks. They should stop doing that. Yeah. He doesn't think people should be having fun, because he's not. Because he never is. Yeah, so I mean, we've kind of gone over what is actually happening on this planet, and we've talked about how the ending is kind of one of those just a guy shows up and explains. But some of the things, yeah. So, like, if I'm going to explain the plot of what happens, it's mostly going to be people imagine something and then it shows up. As well as, and I did actually already talk about Sulu shooting a pistol, so that narcotic effect or whatever, a pistol slides out of a rock on the ground. Sulu picks it up and starts firing it off. Let's talk about Finnegan.
Finnegan.
The Kirk's bully from the academy shows up and is sort of a central recurring point in this episode. He's incredibly obnoxious. He's accompanied with extremely cartoony music. He is a cartoon bully. He's not like, bullying in a real term is a real social type of manipulation or coercion, and like it's an ongoing, struggle and system of abuse kind of thing. And this is a cartoon bully that just wants to beat Kirk up and dance around laughing about it and at him. And there's so much of this guy.
Love Finnegan though, like he's clearly someone Kirk knows back from back in the day. He's clearly, either an old friend or an old bully. It's hard to say specifically how he actually knows him, but he's still, I love him. He's fun. I like him a lot for like a semi-antagonist,
Yeah, the actor portraying him does an incredible job.
He really does.
He's
Like
really selling this bully shit.
he looks like he's loving every minute of being on that set doing that shot,
Yeah, and a good yeah. And so a considerable portion of like what the plot line ends up being is Kirk kind of chasing this guy around, thinking he's going to get some answers from him. And like a huge portion of the middle of this episode is like a Scooby-Doo chase where Kirk's chasing this guy through canyons and around boulders, and the guy keeps appearing like at the top of, a cliff or behind Kirk, or like, there's the very classic thing where Kirk comes like running around the corner and the dude's just like lying there, like on his side on the ridge, looking all relaxed. Like, and also the soundtrack is really kicking into high gears, and that actually is when they begin just fighting for 10 or 15 minutes. Just throwing each other around again, really stage fighting, like flailing around on the ground. And yeah, and you mentioned pretty good beaten up dude makeup this time.
Yeah, no, they did a really good job on his make on both of their makeups, but in particular, Kirk's was just spot on.
And Kirk's uniform is just torn to shreds. Just in pieces. So
But yeah,
Spock's sort of.
it's a good episode to have Spock do his thing and be anti everything fun when the whole episode's about having fun.
Well, yeah, because he needs to, and he doesn't. He kind of almost. I mean, part of the reason it does end is because Kirk kind of, with Spock's help, kind of solves it. Not really, but Spock at least. What sort of, and I'm sort of jumping to the end here, but what happens is that when Kirk finally lines up the away team and everyone and says, "Stop. Don't breathe, don't think, you are at attention, stay, don't, focus on what I'm saying, don't think about anything else." And that's when the caretaker is like, "Oh, these guys aren't having fun."
Yeah, no, it's the but we were trying to have fun. How is you guys getting shot and run over by knights not fun? I am so sorry to have misunderstood how humans enjoy themselves.
Well, he assumed that they would know. Like, if you're running this planet, you got to imagine role players are going to stop by.
Oh, this is just LARP City. This is
Yeah,
100% a LARP
exactly.
place.
Right.
But if we haven't been there before, how are we going to know it's a LARP plan, right? So, and that's really where the issue. The mis it's almost a miscommunication, honestly. It's like broken telephone.
That's a big question, because I would like to know who is coming to visit this planet.
Oh, it's going to be like the Romulans or some shit.
Yeah, I wonder, yeah. Because if they've got like customers and stuff, it's interesting,
Oh man.
yeah.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, like, is this like the rich elite spa day? Like, what version of elite, rich, spacefaring people is this their spa day that they're dropping? You know, the like Epstein Island type place, you know?
I mean, maybe not exactly like
I hope not
that,
exactly like that, but like that level is what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah,
Look,
okay.
I will make the references to the thing that comes to mind the quickest. And unfortunately, I've been reading about Epstein lately, okay?
Well, I hope no one ever tells you that the first thing that pops into your head is gonna destroy the city.
Oh God, I hope not. We do not need a Stay Puft Marshmallow Man wandering around.
But while this is all going on, there are hints. Spock detects that there's some industrial activity under the surface. There's some kind of power field that is drawing energy from the ship and interfering with communications. It's hard for him to beam down. There's something Spock knows that there's something he's got to get to the bottom of. Meanwhile, a tiger shows up to scare some red shirts, which like that's cool. I like seeing a tiger.
Oh, and we found out that apparently McCoy has a little side piece.
Yes. McCoy goes on a whole adventure with a girl in a princess dress, and then a black knight kills him. He says, "None of this can be real. We're all hallucinating because of some pollen or something. I'm gonna prove it." And the black knight runs him down and impales him on his lance. Good job, McCoy.
How right he was without necessarily knowing how right he was, eh?
He was almost there.
Yeah.
The
No, he was surprisingly close.
only thing that he got wrong was that it's an illusion that will be unable to hurt him.
Yeah.
When they're actually like plastic robots or something that are printed on demand, we're not really sure exactly what the people are.
They kind of almost sort of looked like mannequins,
Yeah, one of them looks like a guy covered in Vaseline, the Black
or
Knight.
even like Madame Tussauds' wax
Oh,
feature, like
okay,
wax
yeah,
dude, you know,
right.
something. And actually, if it was a wax dude, that might explain the shininess as it's melting from the, like the heat.
Oh, yeah. Finnegan certainly looks like he might be melting or something. But all of the babes look pretty normal.
Yeah, they do. There's no melting happening there. They gotta do something to pull in that sex appeal, right? That's what that
Oh,
is.
yeah, and this is a big McCoy glands episode.
Oh, so McCoy glands.
When they get him back, when the caretaker is like, "Oh, by the way, no one's dead," McCoy comes out with two space babes in the most ridiculous fur bikinis I think I've seen yet.
One on either arm.
One on either arm, one in pink and one in yellow, and he's having the time of his life.
I'm not dead. They just take you underground and patch you back up in an instant. It's amazing.
And then we assume that when everyone leaves, these women melt back into goo.
I don't know how what they do with the creations, because like there's no indication outside of the caretaker. There's no indication of who actually lives on that planet. So it could be the caretaker on their own, and when there's nobody using the planet, they just make up stuff to keep themselves busy and entertained, right? Like
I mean,
everything on that planet could be completely a fabrication of the caretaker.
including the caretaker could be an AI with in a printed body that
It
just
might
prints
it
it
might
whenever he
be.
needs it.
It might even be a case of like a type of sentient being that we don't have, you know, cognitive power to really understand, like an energy or psychic and or a psychic being that just controls all of it themselves 100%. Everything's just a manifestation of an external being that we haven't met.
It's also possible that they are all on drugs.
It's probably that one.
And that's shore leave.
It was a good episode. It ended out of nowhere. It's another one of those, oh, we solved it, we're done episodes.
It's like a big action spectacle kind of episode with a lot of costumes and a lot of weirdness. And then yeah, and that's a template. That's a Star Trek template. There's some that just end with someone going, oh, it was because of this. Okay, let's go home.
Yeah. But no, overall, fun episode. Good cast. Finnegan is fantastic. I wish there was more of him in the show in general. All of it was just really good.
Yeah, it was fun. I wonder if we should put together some kind of list of episodes that involve mysterious planets where mysterious magical things are happening.
I mean, I've still got to go rewatch it for the Death Toll, so if we want to add more information...
There's a lot of information I need to keep... Yeah, we need to keep track of.
Yeah, I can add that onto here for, like, mysterious planets things or something, but I don't know... I don't know exactly how we
that's
do that.
It's going to become a conversation about what counts, because they're all, to some extent, they're all mysterious, right? The Galileo 7 aren't a mysterious planet, but I'm talking about planets that, like, grant wishes or do something stupid.
Yeah, no, I think it's going to be you have to start differentiating, A, is it a space episode or a planet episode, and B,
right.
Is the planet itself the problem?
Or the people there. Or the fucking giants.
Yeah.
Tune in next week.
Yeah, for more fucking giants.
For fucking giants. they were like real funny fucking giants.
That was fun. That was a silly episode, but it was fun. All right. I think though that's basically it. Like it was a pretty like Pulp Fiction action adventure. Like it felt like a 1920s Pulp Fiction book type thing made manifest, or a cartoon like Scooby-Doo. If this was a Scooby-Doo episode, I would not be surprised.
Yeah, it was very Scooby-Doo.
It was. But it was fun. It was a good episode overall. I enjoyed it. I don't think I have major notes on it. They did a good job.
Agreed. All right. Thank you for listening to The Least Ready Room. I've just had a big man. I just hit record. I don't even know what's happening or where we're at or what I'm supposed to be reading. I had a big argument just now with Google Sheets. Is that what it's just called? Is the spreadsheet just called Google Sheets? I've always had. I have a lot of... Was I supposed to take like a class on spreadsheets in high school or something? Is there a reason why like a spreadsheet... I always have a problem. I always end up deleting everyone else's shit or everything important, or I can't like... I don't know what the hell... the fuck a spreadsheet is or how to use it. I'm discovering at this late stage of life that I'm just cursed, really bad at spreadsheets. I don't fucking know. Anyway, yeah, so that was Shore Leave. The question of the week is, you and your colleagues, while investigating a series of supernatural events, encounter a malevolent old god on top of a Manhattan high-rise apartment building. It is made clear to you that you need to empty your mind of all thoughts, because the first thing you think of will appear and destroy the city. You will eventually, of course, think about something. How will Manhattan be destroyed? Pete says, mine is twofold. That's to my cocktail of neurodivergencies. First, as I was thinking, it's time for Adderall. So Manhattan is doomed to pills, which doesn't seem far off. Second, I tried to clear my mind, and the first thing that popped up was this song, so I have no idea how Manhattan dies from it, but it's going to be amazing. The song is called I Fucked Cthulhu Good. You can find it on YouTube. Raven says, a cute anime cat girl in a maid outfit. That's my basic comfort thing to think about. Uh-oh. Just get her a huge sushi platter and we'll be fine. Saint says, deadly virus, which is maybe a little too on the nose, but I've seen too much media with Manhattan destroyed by virus. Prototype, I Am Legend. Boy, Prototype is a cool game. Toronto ABC will picture the Marshmallow Man. Atheist Man has a good answer. Atheist Man gets revenge on the Elder God, making him destroy Manhattan. He says, conceptual existential obliteration. the concept of anything existing being erased. So on the plus side, all of the old gods also no longer exist. And Surreptitious Music, who will be here next week to talk about the Galileo 7, says, I would imagine the rent getting too cheap. Also, a good choice. So thank you, everybody. Yeah, Galileo 7 is next week. And yeah, this conversation and these all of this stuff and the viewings and the blah, 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 question of the week and all of this takes place on my Discord. You can get a link to the Discord and also a bunch of my other social bullshit at koyadk.tv. That's CUYADK.TV. And you can buy some soap from me at Lake House Soaps to help support all of this bullshit. And, yeah, that's it. I guess I've said all of everything. See you next week.